I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Chris Galis joins me now, the Global BC personality, anchors the landmark News Hour broadcast at six weekdays at 6 p.m. here. He joins me today to talk about news, being an anchor, BC's anchor, if you see him across town on billboards and the sort. He began his career in Calgary and went to work in Dallas, anchoring there, before anchoring the morning program Good Day New York and, well, New York City. He returned to Canada in 2006 as a weekend anchor and transitioned in as the lead anchor when Tony Parsons left Global BC. He's a new dad, too. His wife, Jane Kerrigan, also at Global, have recently adopted. The website is at globaltvbc.com. Please welcome to the Plant Online program Global BC NewsHour anchor, Chris Galis. Good morning, Mr. Galis.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. How did I pass on my little anchor
reading? Wouldn't have changed a thing. Outstanding.
I'll be in at five.
Excellent.
Yeah. So congratulations are in order. You're a newish dad, I guess. August was when you adopted baby.
That's
Will.
Right. Yeah, we are so happy, and thank you for mentioning it. He's the sweetest little boy. We couldn't be happier, and we are so lucky. And realize how lucky we are that we got a wonderful, healthy baby boy. We have a certain amount of openness in the adoption, so he will grow up knowing his birth parents. And how that all evolves is still to be decided, but we're so lucky that the birth mom is a responsible woman who just simply was not in a position to parent. And we're lucky that we're in a position in our lives that we can provide a good, loving home for Will. So couldn't be happier.
Yeah, now I'm reading about you and Jane in TV Week and the mm-hmm. sort, and articles online. You guys have pets in the house?
We do, actually. We're down to one pet now, Marlo, the big gray cat. And his name's Marlo, which sort of is evocative of Mellow, and that's exactly what his personality is. Such a sweet cat. And I actually picked him up after his appearance on the Noon Show with Randy and Neil and her pet segment. So,
yeah,
he's a great cat.
So, gets along with the baby?
Yeah, it's amazing. He's a little put out that he's not number one anymore. So whenever Jane or I happen to be feeding Will, Marlo needs to be very close to that action. But he's curious about the baby You know, we're mindful that there's a lot of superstition about babies and cats together, and of course we're very mindful of that and keep Marlo out of the nursery when William is sleeping. But William's getting to the point where he's curious about the cat too. He's four months old now, so he's starting to figure things out a little bit too. And it's been fun to see that little light bulb go off that, wow, there is another little living creature in this house.
Yeah. Now you've been at Global BC now for 5 years now.
Yeah, five years.
Yeah. I used to read about Good Day New York in Page Six online.
Yeah.
Why did you come back? I mean, it seems to me that if people go to the States or New York especially, they go there, and if, you know, as the song says, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Exactly. I always joke that I had to go to the number one television market in the world to qualify me for a job at Global BC. That's how powerful this station is. And listen, we had a great time in the States, and we loved it. I was on a temporary work visa that was renewable once. It's 3 years in duration, renewable once, so for a grand total of 6 years. And we got to a crossroads whether we wanted to continue living in the States and go for a green card, because I could no longer stay down there on the H-1B. And I came to the end of my contract in New York City, and I'll remind everybody it was with the Fox Network. It was a Fox affiliate. And as great as the show was, and as much as I loved working with my coworkers, I felt management was a little unstable. And when I got to the end of my 3-year guaranteed contract, and they brought in a new female anchor for me to work with, I didn't feel the stability that I felt needed to be there to risk a 1-year contract cycle. And at that time, I'd been in contact with some of the folks back. back here at Global, and they had they said back in 2004, would you be interested in coming back to Canada and working out here on the West Coast? And of course, my wife is from Richmond. My sisters lived out here at the time. Now my parents do. We had a real strong connection to the West Coast. Such a great heritage station. And it really intrigued us because we also knew that Vancouver had won the right to host the Olympics, and I had the opportunity in Calgary to live in a city that had hosted the Olympics. The atmosphere is electric. Really enjoyed that from a journalism point of view, and we really thought that there were a lot of positives to coming home and working in Vancouver with the Olympics coming up. So we really thought about it. And the other thing is, there is huge pressure to perform in New York, and it's not that I couldn't handle that. We really excelled. I won an Emmy there, and it was great.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you have to think about what do you really value in your life, and for me, it was my marriage, and the opportunities that existed in New York meant continued 12 to 16 hour days, working on a network program was kind of the next step that I had explored and had interviewed a few times with the ABC network and talked about being a West Coast correspondent and 160 days on the road. And it was really tough to imagine my lifestyle like that. My marriage is very important to me. My home life is very important to me. And my lifestyle outside of work is very important. And Vancouver seemed like the perfect fit. As much as it was difficult to say goodbye to New York, it's never been a question that we made the right decision coming home to Vancouver and working at Global.
It's good to be part of a winning team, I guess, too, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is the only job I would have come back to Canada for, because it's such a strong station. Back when they first contacted me about it, it was with the belief that Tony was planning to retire. He'd approached them to say that he only had a couple of years left, and what was the plan B? They obviously had worked very hard to build the NewsHour into the 9,000-pound gorilla in local news, and I think he had a real interest in making sure that continued even after his departure. Now, that obviously didn't go exactly as planned, because Tony, the closer he got, I think, to retirement, which was planned for the end of the Winter Olympics, he just didn't want to do it. And I don't blame him for that at all. But I do credit my bosses with sticking to the plan and having the courage to say, we're on a path and we can't really back away from that. And to thank Tony from top to bottom for all of his contributions to the newsroom. But we felt like we wanted to continue in the direction that we were going, and instead of retiring, he's moved on to another challenge and is still a good friend of everybody in the newsroom. It just didn't go exactly as we were all planning.
Yeah, you talk about how well rated your station is, Global is, but it is a fierce market, isn't it?
It is. It's very, very competitive. And when you've been on the top as long as this show has been, you know that everybody is gunning for you. And, you know, they aggressively, our competitors aggressively try to compete against us. They do a ton of promotion. They work very hard. And we have to work that much harder to maintain our place in the market. It really is what drives us and keeps us sharp at the NewsHour.
And so there have been some changes at Global where they've moved Randine and Squire to the final. I've seen that, and they're actually quite good in that. It's very laid back.
Exactly.
You know?
It's a different vibe now there is traditional news off the top. It's a different vibe for a local news program, and I think what we're trying to do is capitalize on an X factor, a kind of mojo that Randine and Squire have that suits late night television, and I think it's been successful, and they've really ratings have gone up since they took over. They've only been doing it a short period of time, so it's hard to really see how that's all going to work out. But I think there's nothing else like it on the air. There's no other anchor team on the air locally that is like those two. And, you know, Squire and Randine together just bring a whole different dynamic to the airwaves. And I think that's what we're trying to capitalize on late night. Now, I should clarify, that all came about because Joe Kropp had enough of 14 years doing the late night show. She is in a relationship, right, and has a family, and really looked at her schedule and her life and said, listen, if there's a way for me not to have to work until midnight every night, I'd really like to see how that unfolds. And so that's how the plan was hatched, and really due to Jill's desire and the company's support of finding a different role for her. There was kind of a shuffle from start to finish with Randine leaving the noon and Sophie sticking around after the morning show to do the noon show now, and teaming her up with Jay Durant, who comes off of late night. So everybody's happy. The show seemed to be successful so far, and it's a win-win all around.
And in terms of the ratings, as a whole, the station is still number one.
We are, yeah. It's true. It's on good nights, you know, we have six viewers to every one that our competitors have. You can still add up all the viewers at all the other stations, and they don't come close to what we have on a nightly basis for the news hour. I'm not bragging. It is a reality that exists. We still marvel at it sometimes, and it is an anomaly in the television industry. It's to see the dominance in the market like they do here in Vancouver with Global BC, it really doesn't exist in any other television market in North America, that the number one station gets a 6 or 7 ratings points. And some nights it's up to an 8 or a 9, and those numbers just don't exist in local television news anywhere else.
And one of your sports anchors, Barry DeLay, has made news, I guess, across the continent now with winning the Children's Hospital lottery. What's that been like in the newsroom? Have people been sucking up to him? Has he been buying gifts for people?
Well, it's funny. I got a lot of emails and texts from people around North America asking if I was, did I know him, and was I good enough friends with him to ask for money? We all had a good laugh, and we all couldn't be more supportive and happy for Barry. He is such a good guy. And to know his connection to the hospital, as some of your listeners might have heard, his daughter, several years ago, was diagnosed with leukemia and was treated at BC Children's Hospital. So every year, as part of their attempts to pay back what they feel was a lifesaver for their family and for their daughter, they've purchased tickets in the home lotto. And so for him to actually win the thing, and not only win it, but, you know, if you watched it unfold on the show, it was really compelling, dramatic television that ended up going viral online and getting them invited to an appearance on the Ellen Show in L.A. And it's really a good story, and I think it was fun, really fun, for all of us to feel a very small part of that with Barry's win.
And so he's still on the air?
He is still on the air, yeah. He had a couple of options, I guess, with the prize. He could take a straight cash payout or a bigger home, or I'm not exactly sure how the prize structure went, but I know he ended up with a $1.4 million home in Fort Langley, and I think a $600,000 cash payout, and maybe even a vehicle in there. So it's obviously takes a lot of the financial burden off any family, but he still has to make a living, and he's happy to do so. He loves his job, and I think Squire and the rest of the sports team is happy that he's sticking around.
Yeah. Did you always want to go into journalism growing up?
You know, it's funny. I look back and I see a lot of things in my life that were signposts that maybe indicated that I was going that way. But in terms of the storytelling and the journalism side of it, I'm not sure if that really struck me until I was in college and I was on a basketball scholarship and had some advice from my athletic director to actually get into a a program and get an education while I was playing basketball. And I literally was flipping through the course book looking for something that interests me. And I saw broadcast journalism, and I thought that it appealed to me on a lot of levels that growing up were clues that maybe I would end up there. I did a lot of reader's theater when I was in junior high. I enjoyed the performance aspect, although I was never in theater. I never took drama. I enjoyed the performance aspect of those kinds of things throughout high school. And there is a performance aspect to what I do. The adrenaline you get when all eyes are on you to tell a story, whether that's a completely made up fictional story as it is in theater, or whether it's real stories that really impact the way we live our daily lives. The adrenaline and the nervous energy that you get, I imagine, are the same. I only know it from a news perspective, but it really is something that appeals to me, and it's a shot of adrenaline, and I just don't get anywhere else. So it really, when I got into the program at Mount Royal College, it's now Mount Royal University in Calgary, the first day of orientation, I knew I had made the right decision. I knew that I would be doing all of the things that interested me. I'd carry around a tape recorder, or anytime anybody had a video camera when I was growing up, I'd want to be the cameraman, and I'd want to do interviews, and I was just making things up. But when I realized how you could make a living, tell good stories, and, you know, be a part of the Fifth Estate, something that's so important to democracy, it seemed like the perfect fit for me.
Were there people that you admired growing up in terms of journalism? Is there anyone that you emulate?
Well, you know, I really loved Peter Jennings. I felt like he was the perfect blend of class and poise, had credibility and charisma on air, and I was really sad when he passed away. I had a chance to interview him at length, actually, in Dallas. When I hosted Good Morning Texas there, and he was, it was shortly after 9/11, and he was on a North American tour of all the major ABC affiliates doing town hall meetings. And he came through Dallas, and we had him on our show, and we talked about what 9/11 meant and how Americans were reacting to it, and, you know, our little secret, and we did acknowledge it at the end, was that we were both Canadians working in news in the United States. He ended up getting his American citizenship, but it was a real neat connection to have with him, and he was very insightful, very intelligent, and I just loved the way that he anchored the program. And, you know, he's gone now, but I see a lot of the qualities that I saw in Peter Jennings in Brian Williams on NBC now. And a way to relate to anybody, no matter what your socioeconomic background, poise, credibility, trustworthiness, those kinds of qualities that I think, you know, any anchor is lucky to have. So if I have any of those things, or if I'm compared in any way to those people, that would be incredibly high praise. Those are guys that I admire in the business.
And Williams, he's sort of changed the idea of anchor. I mean, he's also very funny.
Yep.
He can host Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
Has the role of anchor, has that changed a great deal? I mean, if you look back to people like Walter Cronkite or Douglas Edwards, for example, it has changed, hasn't it? I mean, on last night's NewsHour final, there's a clip of it's online now that you can see of Randine and Squire talking about whether the jacket should be buttoned or not, and then they inevitably talk about her boobs. So, I mean, has the role changed?
I think in some ways it has, but I think in a lot of ways our culture has changed, and there is you know, I think people are comfortable, more comfortable, seeing a more casual delivery, and I don't want that to erode in any way the credibility that comes with being an anchor, especially at the network level like Brian is. But I think people expect you to show some personality. It's more beneficial as a news anchor to show that you can relate to people on a common level that maybe wasn't expected before. We held the Walter Cronkites and the Edward R. Murrows on a pedestal maybe higher than us. And I think now people are more comfortable knowing that the people that they're trusting to deliver their news are real people and have real lives. And maybe that's part of the appeal of Brian Williams, and it's certainly, I think, part of the appeal of Randine and Squire, although you will notice that discussion might not have happened at noon, and that isn't something that I'm ever going to discuss with Deb Hope on the 6 o'clock news hour, but finding a place for that in our broadcast day, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, what's the day like for you? Do you go home at 7? Is it a long day?
It can be. Normally, we have an assignment meeting, or we call it the editorial meeting at 11 a.m., where we all meet in a big boardroom, and the assignment editor, news director, and all the people that are the head of the various departments that it takes to put a show on the air meet at 11 o'clock, and we discuss all of the stories that we're going to cover that day, and whether we're going to make a full story out of it, or whether it's just going to be a voiceover, 30 seconds, how many resources we're going to put into each thing. And then at around 20 after 11, 11:30, we typically we'll break, and we, for the news hour anyway, dump all of that information into a rundown and define, okay, what's going to be the lead? What's going to be the top of the B block, which is the section right after our first commercial break, C block and D block as we continue through the hour. Some things are static. I mean, weather never changes. It's always basically in the same place. Sports is always in the same place. Mike McCardle always runs at the end of the hour. But there's some flexibility within the hour, and we discuss and sort of the show evolves throughout the day. And what we come out of that 11 o'clock meeting believing is going to be the lead sometimes isn't by the time 6 o'clock rolls around. So it pays to be flexible, and that's what makes the job exciting, too. We never really know what's going to happen from one moment to the next throughout the day. And that's what makes it exciting, too. So the day is basically monitoring the news that we've established is important in the morning, monitoring the day and the news feeds that we have, and online and social media has become such a big part of what we monitor now. It's almost replaced the wire. To get a sense of what's happening and to kind of define what the show is going to look like at 6 o'clock. And we monitor that throughout the day, make adjustments to our writing and stories, and I liaise with the reporters because I write news breaks and promos that pop up in the news hour to promote what's coming up later, because we want to hold people throughout the hour. It's important that we get them watching from 6 all the way through 7, so the writing of those promos is very important. I need to have a good understanding of the entire content of the show, obviously, to be able to write those things. So I'm as involved as anybody is in the writing, and we sort of define what the show is throughout the day.
And finally, Chris, how many suits and ties do you have? I noticed yesterday, on yesterday, you and Squire sort of went purple.
Yeah.
Did you coordinate that?
It's funny. No, we never coordinate, and some people think we must, but the truth is, over the last two seasons, there has been a lot of purple ties, and unfortunately, I'm bound by trends, right? I do want to try to keep it fresh. I do try to always wear a different shirt and tie combination at least. I have about 15 to 18 suits. I'm pulling a couple out of the rotation, but you know, I try to keep it fresh, and there's a lot of sort of being beholden to what the stores have in for their tie selection. And if there happens to be a lot of purple in there, well, I'm wearing a lot of purple ties, and every now and again Squire and I will match up. But it's really random. And it is something that we, I mean, I don't want it to be distracting, but I also, hey, life's too boring to wear plain ties, right? So I try to make something up every day that's different.
And so how many ties do you have?
It's hard to tell because I shop for them every couple of weeks, but I'm going to say I've got 180. Half a year's worth is what I'm going to say. And then I sort of cycle them off the back end and keep adding to the front end.
Yeah. I mean, Tony used to tell the story about how one day he decided to wear a bow tie and people just complained about it. I mean,
I've heard that story about how the phone lines lit up. Same thing when Jill Krop got hair extensions one day, I think. She was getting ready to go to Jamaica, and the day before she went on vacation, she got hair extensions. And they have never received as many phone calls at the switchboard as they did for that. People are very quick to give their opinion on things, so we've got to keep it between the lines generally for the news hour. But there's still some room to have some fun throughout that hour, and that's what I really enjoy about the show.
Chris, I appreciate this. It's been fun talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Joe, for having me on. I appreciate it, and keep up the great work.
Global BC's News Hour is on at 6 p.m. every night. It's anchor Chris Galis on the line. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.